This is the TSN MMA Show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Welcome to the TSN MMA Show. This is the Year in Review special, and I'm very pleased to have four of my good friends here in studio from all kinds of different media outlets, ranging from newspaper to web to a little bit of everything. So we've got Danny Austin joining me. He was on the show co-hosting a couple weeks back from the Calgary Sun. Thanks for coming back in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Just arrived from the airport again from Calgary. Flew in just for the show.
Felt good, further to them.
It's good to have all that journalist money. Alexander K. Lee of MMA Fighting.
Hello.
Entering the fray. It's your first time here in the studio. And recent addition to the MMA Fighting team. So it's good to have someone in Toronto on the MMA Fighting team. Chamath Kharsandu, going to be moving to Toronto, I believe, in 2018 of MMA Junkie. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. You know, this is what Canadian hospitality is all about. You know, I've only been here for a couple of weeks in Toronto and already invited to the great TSN studios. Fantastic to be here.
Awesome having you. And we've got James Lynch of, I don't know how long the show is. We've got MMA Odds Breaker, Fightful. What else do we have?
We got a Flow Combat. Yeah. Sports Illustrated, MMA, and Fansided.
Awesome. There's
one other outlet, but we don't need to mention that on this show.
We can ignore them, yeah. So we've got a lot to discuss today because we're going to break down the year in MMA, and it's been a very interesting year, a year of ups and downs. Not a very big pay-per-view year, so to speak, but we did have a couple big ones. And, of course, a lot of new stars entering the organization and making names for themselves and coming along. So we've got a lot of categories that I've sent to you guys in advance that we're going to go over. And we'll start with your favorite singular moment of 2017. Let's start on a high note. What was it about 2017 that stood out to you? And we'll start with you, Danny.
For me, there's not really much competition on this. And I think that there's a lot of recency bias for all of my answers. But seeing Georges St-Pierre hold that middleweight title at Madison Square Garden, I mean, for me personally, it was amazing as a Canadian reporter who, you know, we all know he's part of the reason we fell in love with this sport. Seeing him come back, you know, people forget not a lot of people were giving him much of a shot against Bisping. I mean, he was the underdog and looked like he was fading, getting it done. And then just seeing him stay in the octagon as the rest of the arena cleared and just really kind of relishing the moment was, reminded me why I love the sport. And, it was a real gentleman getting rewarded for his efforts. And, yeah, nothing else comes close.
What about you, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I'm a huge Georges St-Pierre fan. I've been telling people for years that he was going to come back, that he'd fight again. I had a lot of people saying that definitely wasn't going to happen, and that I was just like, you know, you'll see, he'll be back. I don't know if anyone could have predicted the circumstances under which he would come back to fight Bisping middleweight title, but you couldn't have asked for a better outcome. It actually happened on my birthday as well, so that was amazing. But I will just to add a little variety to this, I will also want to point out, I thought Roxanne Modafferi getting a UFC title shot, again having to go to The Ultimate Fighter, which I know is not a show that a lot of fans hold in high esteem anymore. But the fact is, you know, she'd gone through the UFC before, through The Ultimate Fighter. She fought in the UFC one time. It looked like that was going to be it. Years later, she comes back, gets that title shot. You know, it would have been amazing if she won it, but congrats, Nico Montaño. Good for her. She won instead. But just seeing Modafferi in that position was awesome. She's a great fighter, great personality.
So let's see if the non-Canadian has a different opinion.
Well, here's the thing. I had a feeling that, my Canadian colleagues here would kind of reference the GSP fight and the comeback, and I've got no complaints about that whatsoever. And I guess if you're going to categorize an event, a card, that whole pay-per-view, that main card definitely ticks the box. But for me personally, and I put some thought into this, there was a 20-30 minute period this year which just entertained the bejesus out of me, and it was the Toronto stop of the Maymac World Press Tour. That Canadian crowd was unbelievable. You got arguably the biggest recording artist in the world in Drake introducing the two biggest names in combat sports, Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. And just coming off the LA stop on that tour, where Conor McGregor was a little kind of, unprepared to the proceedings of the event, to see him come out just swinging. He was serving more zingers than KFC, for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying? And that crowd in Toronto, you know, I've always been a big fan of Canadian, MMA, crowds in the past, but they, played a big part in, participating in that whole event. You could have stopped that press tour right there and then and gone straight into fight weekend. You'd have been good.
You probably should have.
And they probably should have.
Only went downhill from there.
Exactly. But no, that 40-minute period just had everyone buzzing in all parts of the world, whether you were streaming it live, reporting from on the scene. So for me, if you're looking at just my favorite singular moment, it was Conor McGregor laying the smackdown on Floyd Mayweather in front of the Toronto fans.
James?
So initially, at the very moment this happened, I think for me, when John Jones had beat Cormier, this is before, of course. He got busted and everything. That was a great moment because it looked like we had finally seen the comeback. We had finally seen Jones overcome his own personal demons. And he finished Cormier and he did it in spectacular fashion. And I remember being on Twitter that night seeing everyone talking about how, there's no question John Jones is the greatest of all time. So that very moment at that time was, the best singular moment. However, what preceded that has to make me sort of cancel that out and go with, George beating Bisping. But I do want to acknowledge that because I remember that night when Jones did beat Cormier before we had known, all the PED allegations and everything else. That was a very special moment that I think a lot of fans sort of rejoiced over at that point.
It makes me so mad that we can't celebrate that moment anymore.
It's ruined.
It's everything with John Jones, but that specific night was so special and you really thought we were seeing like the apex predator of this sport return. It kills me that we don't get to celebrate it.
Yeah, and especially with how classy he was afterwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I will say that Daniel Cormier in the cage afterwards crying and looking disoriented was not fun.
It was good until John had his hand raised, and then we can cut it off from there when Cormier was interviewed, which was an awful idea.
Yeah, that was a bad part that came of it. I also had St. Pierre as my favorite singular moment, but I was on the fence with him in another moment. So I'm going to give you my other moment just so that we can create some diversity and variety for this particular one, and that would be the Mighty Wisbar. Seeing Demetrius Johnson do that, mm-hmm. and then watching the replay, and every time you watch the replay subsequently, you're like, wow.
I just watched it yesterday. And I was like, I still couldn't believe it.
And you still can't believe it. And it's like video games becoming reality, and it's just the pinnacle of innovation and execution in mixed martial arts. And really, that's why we watch the sport, is to see these guys perform at their peak. And Demetrius doing that, especially in front of a crowd that had just, a lot of them had undergone tragedy earlier in the week in Las Vegas at UFC 216. The gravity of that moment and how that was executed really was something. And that it was really the moment of the year that stands out to me as one that really dropped my jaw. Also Rose beating Joanna was another kind of moment. It was like, wow, did that just happen? But just watching the replay of that Demetrius move was crazy. It was something else. Now, we've got Fight of the Year. I was going to do Event of the Year, but I think 217 was probably going to be consensus. Yeah. So Fight of the Year, I'm hoping we have a little bit more variety because there were so many fights to choose from. My article on TSN.ca had my top 10 fights of the year. So if you've read that, you already know my number one, but we'll go over it at the end. Let's start with you, James. We'll go in reverse order for Fight of the Year.
I hate to be kind of boring here, but Michael Johnson, Justin Gaethje, I was live there for it. It's really hard to top something like that, just with the fact that if you go back and watch that fight, one of the most interesting parts for me is Michael Johnson was, seconds away from finishing Gaethje. I think a lot of people, they talk about Gaethje's dominance and everything, and now, the significance of that fight for a couple of reasons. It led to Gaethje coaching the Ultimate Fighter with Eddie Alvarez, which was, ended up, in my opinion, being a pretty good season. And then you have Johnson, who's now fighting at featherweight. Like, it just shows the impact of the sport where, a win for one guy really, puts them ahead and propels them. And, Justin had that fight with Eddie at UFC 218. And then the loss for Johnson, he's lost a couple now, if you look at sort of his losing streak, and now he's going to fight at featherweight. It's just, to me, that was the most significant fight. And then obviously the entertainment factor of, the back and forth, how are they still standing, all that. So for me, it's Johnson and Gaethje.
Sandu?
Yancy Medeiros versus Alex Oliveira. It was just a couple of weeks ago in Detroit. I was there for it. It was an amazing arena, Little Caesars Place. It was this beautiful arena for mixed martial arts. And, Medeiros has been fighting on these Holloway cards as kind of like the table setter for the Hawaiian champion there. And he did it again, and he did it in spectacular fashion. Oliveira obviously played his part. It was just, back and forth, just like James mentioned with the other fight as well, and the crowd are really getting into it. And a lot of these fights end up going to decision, and you kind of applaud and clap both fighters. But the fact that Medeiros had it in him, had the guts, the heart, the determination to actually finish the fight, kind of was a cherry on top. So for me, it's Medeiros-Oliveira.
Alex?
You can't go wrong with that. On that same card, I'm going to go with the Alvarez-Gaethje fight, actually. So kind of along the same lines with you guys, because that Medeiros-Oliveira fight was insane. The Gaethje-Johnson fight was insane. And James, I like what you said about, that fight's a good example because it looked like, Gaethje had gotten hurt. But what he does is he just outlasts people and breaks them down. And that's his specialty. And he himself just recently, after losing to Alvarez at 218, said, this time I was the one who got broken down. And if you guys, if we anyone gets a chance to watch that fight again, watch Alvarez, and he is brilliant. They're both fantastic. It's not just performance of the year. I think it's the fight of the year. They're both brilliant. Alvarez's body work is just immaculate, and his just ability to just tempt Gaethje to, you know, go for his usual power style and avoid it, especially after seeing him, you know, Alvarez, we saw him get knocked out by McGregor. We saw him get hurt pretty badly in the Poirier fight before that ended in a no contest. It's like, man, what is Alvarez doing? He's got to get out of there. Somehow he fought just the perfect fight against a guy like Gaethje who had never been beaten and handed him his first loss. And for me, I mean, you couldn't go wrong again with the other UFC 218 fight, but I thought Alvarez Gaethje, best fight of the year that I saw.
Danny?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as fight fans, like, we all just love all of these fights. So I'm going to go a little bit sort of in another direction. For me, it was TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt. I love that fight. It was such high-level MMA, and both of them were, you know, swinging for the fences. Dillashaw was effectively done, as far as I could tell, but was saved by the bell and then comes back. And, you know, the emotions of that fight, us knowing the story, which had gone on for years and years and years. Part of why I loved 217 was the narrative that kind of the good guys won in the end. So for me, I mean, I don't actually think it's fight of the year, but like for me, it was my fight of the year for all of those reasons. But like,
and that's all that matters, damn it.
Yeah, I don't actually put it above, but it's a fight that, I mean, since we're, you know, trying to highlight the best of the sport, for me, that was the highest level MMA fight we had pretty much all year.
It yeah, lived up to the consensus 1 and 2 for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, that one didn't even make my top 10 on TSN.ca. But,
which is part of why I saw your top 10, read your top 10, was like, I gotta have something else.
I didn't have any title, no title fights on my top 10, surprisingly. And I went back and watched all of them, and I watched a lot of fights to make that. That article took a long time to put together because I was like, I really don't want someone to send me a message and be like, oh, you forgot this. And I was like, yeah, I did forget that, didn't I? I was so worried. That was one of the ones where I posted it, and I was like, oh, man, someone's going to message me that I forgot an obvious one. And I was like, oh, I forgot the Don, like, yesterday. Or I think it was last night, I was like, oh, man, I forgot to put that great Dong Young Kim fight on it. And then I went look back today. It was like March 2016 that fight happened. Who was he against? It was Dong Young, Maestro Dong Young Kim versus...
Polo Reyes.
Polo Reyes. That was early last year. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't forget that one. That was,
that was
fight.
LA, right? That was 199.
I can't remember.
I thought it was international. I can't remember either.
Who knows? I also had Gaethje versus Michael Johnson. You know, I was in the back room doing interviews and stuff, and that fight just started, and we were glued to the TV, just being like, whoa, everybody in the room was going crazy. And I went back and watched it, and I was like, I hope I don't have a bias from watching that with a lot of people where we all thought it was crazy. I went back and watched it, and I was like, yeah, this is the fight of the year. Because I watched it even back-to-back with Alvarez versus Gaethje, and I was like, wow, this fight was even more, like, it was even more exciting than that fight. And I had just watched that fight, 'cause it was a couple weeks ago, and I thought, I was like, wow. And same with the fight that you mentioned, the Oliveira versus Medeiros fight. That was recent, and I was blown away by that fight too. But then when I went back and watched that Johnson versus Gaethje, and as James mentioned, both guys just put into deep waters during that fight on several occasions, and it was just a testament of will to see who was going to be able to come out on top and survive and then prosper. Oh man, that fight was awesome. Yeah, and it was only what, a round and a half, or it was the end of the second round.
The crazy thing is, if you watch it back, you're like, does Gaethje win this? You're like, doesn't he win? Like, you watch this fight and you're like, Gaethje wins, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and every time you watch it, you have the same reaction.
I know he wins, but am I wrong? Maybe I remembered it wrong. And then you watch it, and then when he does actually win, you're like, holy cow.
Yeah, because he got tagged in that first round. Yeah, that fight was awesome. I get excited talking about that one. Now, this should be an interesting category. I think there will probably be only about 3 or 4 different people that we end up having his fighter of the year. So why don't you go ahead, Danny?
I'm going to go Francis Ngannou. I don't
I
think that he made the biggest impact of any fighter of the year, and I think there are certainly fighters with more impressive resumes, but I mean, he was ready to go with JDS in Edmonton and might have been able to get 3 in. It's not his fault he couldn't fight 3 times this year. That knockout of Overeem earlier this month is my single favorite knockout in human history. I think he's a superstar. I think he's the best heavyweight in the world, certainly the most dangerous, and he proved that to me this year. And for me, all of the other criteria, which again, I am sort of trying to make sure that I'm not having the same answers with you guys, all the other criteria I buy into, I think all of your answers are probably right, but for me...
they're right to us, damn it.
But for me, Francis Ngannou, I mean, I think we got a new heavyweight champion in January, and, you know, it's just off by a month, but for me, he's the most impressive guy I saw all year.
Alex, your fighter of the year for 2017.
You know, it's tough because last year felt like we had a ton of options. We had like Bisping. You could have gone with McGregor. You could have gone with Cody Garbrandt. There was Amanda Nunes. This year, I think none of the champions fought more than twice or defended their title more than twice.
Only two champions.
Yeah, there wasn't anyone
defended
doing, like,
more than once.
Who had like a Cerrone like 4-0 run or some 4-0, 5-0 run. So I'm going to go with a pretty safe answer and a guy who I still never feels like gets enough credit, Demetrius Johnson. You know, he broke the record this year. I'm one of the people who will say I think the competition of flyweight is really good. Like, I know it always gets criticized. I think it's solid. I'm not going to say it's the best division, but I think the competition is strong. He beat two great. I thought he beat two really good fighters. And yeah, again, the highlight reel, you know, arguably the best finish of the year, and cemented himself as maybe the pound for pound greatest now. And if someone wanted to say the pound for pound greatest ever, I'd say have at it. I know that makes people mad when they hear that, but
Why mad? I think that's very fair.
Again, people just don't like the division.
It's a fair argument. It's not definite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I
don't think that.
Nor do I.
Yeah.
But there's an argument. He cemented that. You have to include him now in any argument. So I'd say maybe greatest of all time, but definitely a solid contender for fight of the year.
He's on the Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Sandy, who you got?
Well, I want to echo, first of all, what Alec just said. I think this is an interesting year because I don't think it's a clear-cut answer. I think you can have a variety of different answers and none of them would be kind of wrong. But I've gone for Max Holloway, beating Jose Aldo in Brazil, no less, at UFC 212 to unify the featherweight division, a division that was looking for some repair given what McGregor had done to it in terms of just leaving it as champion. That was great. But then to go and do it again and beat Aldo, who is... You know, regardless of the Conor McGregor knockout, is, you know, widely considered to be the greatest featherweight of all time. To beat Jose Aldo back to back and finish him in the span of, you know, what, 6-7 months or whatever it was, I take my hat off to him. And the fact that this is a guy who is going to be a defending champion, who has restored some, you know, order to that featherweight division, and is waiting to fight the next contender, you know. Considering how other champions are treating their divisions, I've got nothing but respect for him. And for me, Max Holloway, and he's put Hawaii back on the map in a big, big way, which is huge. And so all credit to him. And so he is my fighter of the year 2017.
James.
Got to be boring here again. I'm also going with Max Holloway, but I'll kind of expand a little bit more on what Chimakar was sort of speaking of. One of the things I liked about the fact that he beat Aldo twice is that the fact that we saw Aldo just dominate Frankie Edgar just a year before. So it clearly shows that, you know, some people said after USADA, is Aldo the same? After McGregor, is he the same? Clearly he was, because he beat Frankie Edgar, who was supposed to fight Max Holloway on that card. So we're talking about a guy in, you know, Edgar, who lost Aldo. Aldo fought Holloway twice. Got finished twice. We're talking about the greatest featherweight of all time. He gets finished twice, and you know, just the age that Max Holloway is. And really, I mean, Holloway didn't beat Cub Swanson that long ago either. So to me, it's like there's such a huge separation between the top that is Max Holloway and then everyone else that I really think it's hard to ignore. And just like Chimakar said, the impact that he's had on Hawaii and, you know, sort of bringing that back since BJ Penn's been gone, I think it's great. And to me, you know, there's a lot of different fighters you could have put on here as well. But for me, to beat the greatest featherweight of all time, not once but twice, is just something I can't ignore. So I got to give it to Max Holloway.
A great answer. And he was in my mix as well. But if you would have asked me January 1st, 2017, which champions would not be beaten this year, my two answers would have been Demetrius Johnson and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Mm-hmm. Rose Namajunas beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the first round by strikes. She has to be my fighter of the year. I think she did what a lot of people thought was unthinkable 1 year ago from now, beating a champion that I don't think anybody thought really had anybody that was going to be able to hang with her. You know, she had already beaten the best of the division. Rose Namajunas came out of nowhere, went over Michelle Waterson, which doesn't look as impressive now given what we've seen from Waterson so far in the UFC. But a win over Joanna in the first round, the way she did it, the way she tried to ignore Joanna's head games, I think that, to me, that puts her at the top for Fighter of the Year. She was the one that I thought, you know, kind of transcended that division and overcame what a lot of people thought was going to be an unbeatable champion. So I'm going to go with Rose.
All I'm saying is my guy is the only one who can break the space-time continuum.
Yeah, I mean, if you put Rose Namajunas against Francis Ngannou in a fight, I think we know who the winner would be. But that's not really how we rate Fighter of the Year. And I've got to give kudos to Rose. And I also like, you know, her attitude that she's not really looking to talk trash. She wants to just be nice. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really sell tickets, but it is what it is. Newcomer of the Year. We've got a lot of great talent that emerged in the UFC this year. So for Newcomer of the Year, I'd like to think that it's someone who debuted in 2017. And I think there are a lot of good candidates. So, James, we'll start with you so that you don't have to repeat someone else's answer.
No, you get to go first.
Exactly.
No, I appreciate it. Volkan Oldsmeer is my guy. 3-0 this year. I know the fight with OSP was very close. Some people felt he didn't win that one. But to go out there and knock out Misha Serkinov the way he did, and Serkinov had never been knocked out in his career. Now, granted, it's a little bit easier to say that after what happened to Serkinov last weekend. But that was an impressive win. And then, of course, the knockout of Jimmy Manua. You know, Manua's a guy who has been knocked out before, but it's tough. It's not like it's something, you know, it's not like it happens every fight. So to go out there and, you know, get two first-round finishes and then get the title shot now against Cormier, I mean, how could you ignore this guy? This is a guy who's supposed to fight in Titan FC. His opponent gets pulled. He gets the short-notice fight against OSP. It's a great story and well-deserved. And, you know, just he's been a big talking point this year, and he gets my Newcomer of the Year award.
Great answer. I forgot that he debuted this year. That's pretty crazy. He's probably better than my answer, but continue. We'll go with you, Sandhu.
Yeah, sure. It's kind of weird to call the fighter I'm about to name the newcomer of the year, considering how long he's been in the game, but I'm going to go with Marlon Moraes. The year didn't start off great for him. Obviously, the split decision loss to Rafael dos Anjos.
Most people thought he won that fight. Exactly,
and that was my point. You know, I think if you know were to score that fight, watching it again, I think most people could kind of give it to him, and maybe the judge would give it to him. Who knows? But then, you know, despite taking that L in his UFC debut with a lot of hype behind him, having fought so many times with WSOF, he comes back. He beats John Dodson. Okay, fine. It was a split decision, but I think most people had it scored for him anyway. But then he follows that up a month later with another knockout of the year contender, brutal knockout of Aljamain Sterling. And now he has set himself up. You know, he's probably just one fight away before he's going to probably fight for the title. So for me, Marlon Moraes is my newcomer of the year within the UFC in 2017.
Alex.
Those are both good picks. You know, it's funny. I when we had discussed this before, I was thinking breakthrough fighter of the year. So I was actually going to mention Danny's fighter of the year, Ngannou. But
he debuted 2 years ago today.
Yeah, but if we're going to go newcomer, if we're going to actually like newcomer, I think I have to mention Cynthia Calvillo. I don't know if she was the most impressive, because Uzdemir is up there for sure. I mean, the guys he beat, you know, he's immediately, top three contender now. Calvillo is probably not quite there yet, but 3-0 in the UFC to start. Some okay competition in her first two fights, but then beating a legitimate vet in Joanna Calderwood, took out JoJo in her last fight. So Calvillo definitely undefeated, very young in the sport, only 6 professional fights, but looks like she could be contending as early as next year. You know, it's not a super deep division. So I'm going with Calvillo. Danny, judging by your reaction, I'm sensing.
Just one thing to add to that, people forget that Cynthia actually fought in LFA this year against Montana De La Rosa.
So 4-0 this year.
And got a win there. So again, that just sort of adds to her resume this year, which has been very impressive. And the UFC's taken notice in giving her bigger fights, and I think that sort of speaks to you picking her.
Yeah, I was so close. I had Calvillo too, and I was like, okay, we got it. I thought I was next. I had it.
I think you summed it up pretty well. And I mean, she had a pretty just amazing first half of the year. Second half of the year, she's up on stage with Kobe Bryant the day that I dunked on him. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, that was fun.
You know, and she's clearly established herself as someone that the UFC is giving a big push to and going to promote well. And I don't have anything else to add. Alex said it all, and then James said it even more, and here I am.
You know, when I look at this particular award, I think of somebody who is really breaking through a division, somebody who's not that old, a younger guy, a prospect or girl. Calvillo, I think, is 28. Ozdemir, I believe, is also 28. Moraes is in his late 20s, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going to go with, one person that was on my shortlist was Zabit Magomed Sharipov. He's a young guy, even though he's older than the champion, surprisingly, that I think is going to make waves. But let's think of an old division, a division that has a lot of guys at the top that have been there for a long time that are waiting to get beaten by a younger guy. And that division would be middleweight. I mean, we've got the champion as a young guy in Whitaker. But then if you look at all the contenders, it's just old. So I'm going to go with Paulo Costa. He's 3-0 in the UFC this year. He just beat Johnny Hendricks, who is a former champion. He's 26 years old, making a lot of noise, training with Eric Albarracin and a lot of good talented fighters out in Arizona. I think he's a guy that's going to make a lot of noise in the middleweight division that is worth a look. And, I don't know how soon he's going to be champion. All it takes is, one or two big wins in the division. But, again, 3-0 in the UFC this year and really making a name for himself, the mixed martial artist formerly known as Borinchenia.
Can I make a little devil's advocate argument?
Sure, absolutely. That's why we're here. We're not here to agree with each other.
I mean, you just mentioned he beat Hendricks. I mean, I know you're only as good as the competition you face sometimes, but I think it's pretty safe to say that Johnny Hendricks will probably not be in the UFC after this. And so to me, while he has been impressive, I think that Hendricks win, unfortunately for him, I just think that I don't think there's a
Bang
way to put it.
But just got knocked out, and that was another win that he had.
Yeah. So I mean, that's one way to look at it. But I do appreciate the fact that he went off the board, and I like that. So,
yeah.
There you go.
I'm glad you appreciate the innovation.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to think of people that will kind of make you think a little bit, yeah. and have some reasons to back it up. Now, Magomed Sharipov is definitely a guy to watch next year. Like, this is a guy that I think is the real deal. And if he ends up fighting Yair Rodriguez, just like, let me know where it's going to be. I'd like to be there.
It's a bad idea. You kill a contender that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true.
But they did Frankie
versus Yair, so they might have already.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're throwing him to the wolves again. What's going on here? They're not like Yair Rodriguez. Did he say something wrong? I don't know. To me, it's like
alpha male. Maybe they don't like alpha male.
That could be. You got to build these guys up. I think it's a great fight for the fans, but I just for either guy, I think it's a bad move. But we'll see.
All right, let's go with the upset of the year, and I think we might all have the same answer here. It's to me, it's pretty clear who it is in the UFC, but we'll start with you, Danny.
I'm curious as to what your answer is.
Okay, go ahead. You want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go with Rose Namajunas defeating Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
I have a different one. That's
good. Okay, so we're not a consensus. I was worried about this one because I just thought it was the answer that stood out the most. I mean, she was a 4-1 underdog, and I know that odds, there are probably people with longer odds that have gotten wins in MMA this year, but I think that just being able to defeat a champion that looked so untouchable and so unbeatable, if you look at the amount of strikes, she was outstriking her opponents by a 3-1 ratio and just dominating them. Never even looked close. Joanna, I think, had only lost one round in the last year. I guess she lost a round to Carolina, and that's about it. But otherwise, she looked relatively untouchable, and she goes out and beats Rose Namajunas. Rose Namajunas goes out and beats Joanna. I think that, to me, is why that's the upset of the year.
I had it as my honorable mention.
Oh, okay. The only reason it wasn't
upset of the year was just because it was a title fight. Mm-hmm. So, I think you had to respect Rose a little bit.
There are very few upsets in title fights.
Yeah,
that's true.
But
I mean, you're talking about upper echelon fighters.
I do take it. I'm going to go more recent. I think Josh Emmett's knockout of Ricardo Lamas this weekend. Ricardo Lamas doesn't lose to anyone who isn't the number one or number two guy in the division. I didn't give Emmett a shot. I thought this was going to be a joke fight. I was kind of annoyed that it was even on the card, to be honest. So for him to just go and just knock him out with that dirty left hook.
Shades of Bisping Rockhold.
Yeah, I have all the respect in the world for Ricardo Lamas. I think he's one of the best fighters in the company. And you go out as a bit of a guy most of us are kicking, and knock a guy like Lamas out, that's my upset.
Okay, before we go to Alex, I want to take a sidebar here, because you guys know I always have gripes with the rating system and the ranking system in the UFC.
Do you?
So Emmett is like ranked third, I believe, now, because he beat Lamas in that division. Doesn't make weight, comes in and beats that guy. So now he gets to, because he beat that guy, he leapfrogs everybody else in the rankings. To me, that doesn't seem right.
Goddamn disgrace is what it is.
Yeah. Do you agree? Is that how you feel, or are you just mimicking me?
No. It's a goddamn disgrace. I agree with you 100%. The rankings are a joke. There's something very fishy going on with how these members of the media, nobody in this room, is contributing to these rankings. And, I'm thankful that you're at least putting something out there on Twitter, Aaron, by being almost the UFC ranking police, because you're calling them out. It's very kind of, and it's not just like one or two things. It's a laundry list of some real bad things going on with those ranking systems, and I think there needs to be kind of more light shed on that.
Well, let's say Old Dominion beats all the people in their division in college basketball. I'm going to speak a different language, Sandhu, than you're probably used to, because college basketball in
just
the UK
said Premier League.
What is that?
Yeah, it's kind of an unknown thing. But let's say Old Dominion, a team that's never ranked, beats Duke in like an early game in the season, and Duke's ranked number one. Old Dominion isn't number one now. That's just not how it works. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to still beat other teams to show that you're worthy of being at that ranking. Even if you beat whatever the number 10 team, you're not going to move up to number 10 just because you beat that team. And no disrespect to Josh Emmett, he trains at a good camp. He's made featherweight before. He made featherweight in the fight before this one. Took the fight on short notice. Didn't make weight. That's fine. I don't really even care if he makes weight or not. I just don't think that it's right that he leapfrogs like Yair Rodriguez and Duho Choi and Dennis Bermudez because he got this one big win.
And also, it does matter. This affects people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
So I'll speak straight up. If you were voting, stop. Just stop.
Stop voting, period?
If you are a media member, I don't think you should be voting on it.
Just withdraw? That's smart. I like that. You're not getting paid.
No, flat out. I think you are impacting the ability of a fighter to make money, to negotiate contracts, all of that. And media is not supposed to do that. We're supposed to cover the sport, not impact it. So if you were voting, you were being irresponsible as a media member. This is Danny Austin saying that. Stop it. Just stop. Danny.
Co-signed by Matt Carsandu. Yeah.
Guys, that's an excellent point. And now that you've said that the media should not get involved with the rankings, let me give you my personal rankings for the featherweight division. I will say I have a staunch rule when I'm doing my own personal rankings that, like, one, if you beat someone, I disagree with the sort of the college analogy, because I feel like if you beat someone, unless the circumstances are like, I can't even think of an example, but you almost always take their spot. Now, this Emmett one was tricky because he was so far in my rankings, so far down. Then he missed weight. Then he beats Llamas. And you're like, well, what do I do? So I actually had to drop Llamas down. I actually have Llamas down around like the 8th spot.
Yeah, that seemed to happen in the rankings also. Like Llamas dropped down to 6, 7, or 8.
I didn't give Emmett. I didn't give Emmett a top 5 spot. I just dropped Llamas down accordingly and then moved Emmett ahead of him. But you're right. Should he even move ahead of him when he misses weight? It's very tricky and doesn't have near the resume that Llamas does at 145 pounds.
It's really, that's what it's about. It's about resume, mm-hmm. I think. You know?
So my rankings were definitely messed up by that. Like, I followed my own rules to keep my rankings the way they were, but I'm just looking at them now and I'm like, I don't know if this accurately represents now the top 10 featherweight contenders.
Like, I'll give a shout out to Brian Heminger, who's one of the guys that does the rankings, because I was looking at his rankings and I think he has Kamaru Usman ranked like second or third, which seems crazy. But when you look at the names that he's ranked above, you're like, would he be favored against those people?
Yeah.
Probably.
Usman should be up there.
Probably.
I mean,
hasn't beaten a ranked guy. And that's what keeps him out of the rankings. But you still have to look at how good that the fighters are. Like, if you're dominating guys and it's not even close, like, there's a reason for that. Like, we're talking about high-level professional mixed martial arts here.
By the definition that the UFC puts out, are the rankings, and I'm seriously asking because I don't know, are they meant to be sort of our rankings of who the best fighters are at that moment? Or is it supposed to be... like basically the lineup for who gets a title.
I don't think that there's really any criteria.
People have different criteria, yeah.
Yeah, well,
for sure.
That's a problem.
Yeah. All right, Alex, let's...
lots of problems with the
rankings. Sidebar over. I'm glad you guys agree with me on this one. So let's go with your upset of the year.
I almost want to let James go first because I feel like we're going to have the same pick, but I have a good alternate because I think I know what he's going to pick.
You do? Well,
why don't you guys just say it at the same time?
Yeah. I think Elkins, Darren Elkins.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're a mind reader.
I don't know if you want to go first on this one, because I'll talk about it a little
I'll kind of give my reasoning for it.
Well, James does work for MMA Oddsbreaker, so you do know, take a careful look at what the odds are for what the actual biggest, because is that the actual biggest upset of the year in the UFC?
I have to double check that, but it was pretty significant. He was a plus 525 underdog.
I think it was Rose.
It might have been Rose. I think at close, he was 7-1.
He could have been, but here's the kicker. Elkins wins by TKO and KO, was plus 1560.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that in itself is, you know, pretty significant. And the other reason I picked Elkins is because, to me, upset of the year, you know, Emmett went out there, he knocked out Llamas. No offense, but Llamas has been knocked out before. Chad Mendes knocked him out in the first round. He was knocked out early in his career, so it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that he could be knocked out in the first round. It's just, it's happened to him before. But to see Bektik lose the way he did, and the fact that Bektik was winning that fight into the third round,
dominating,
and then Elkins went out there and beat him, that is like the upset.
Yeah, I just rewatched that fight, and he won all but 10 seconds of that fight.
Exactly. And to do it at the last minute, I mean, it was shades of, you know, Tim Boach and Okami. I mean, it's really, you don't see that too often in MMA. So that was it. And I want to give a quick honorable mention. I know we're sticking with UFC here, but we got, you know, Zach Freeman against Aaron Pico, just because no one gave Zach Freeman any respect. He was a plus 600 on the odds heading into that one. So, you know, surprising to, you know, most, but to those in the know, it should have been a lot closer.
Yeah. Although Pico's body of work in MMA was nothing at that point.
That's true. I mean, that's true.
But again, odds would indicate that was a very big upset.
Yep.
And going into the third round of that fight, Elkins was plus 1350. So
and the odds thing's interesting because I don't know if a lot of people know this. You know, when Holly beat Ronda, she actually wasn't the biggest underdog to win that year, odds-wise.
Yeah.
It was actually Frankie Saenz when he beat Alcantara.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people forget about that. So it's interesting to see sort of what the public and, you know, as far as how the odds go and everything. So there we go. That's my pick. Really boring. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate you ruining it.
So Alex, you got the same pick, same reasons?
I will say this. Hold on. If he's going to break the Bellator barrier now. And no, I hope
it was like an honorable mention. That's
I will also say, I think Christina Williams, Heather Hardy, was a nice upset. I'm a big Heather Hardy fan. I think she's a very nice person and a interesting fighter. But she was also probably way too heavily favored against, given that her lack of a resume, against Christina Williams. And Christina Williams looked sensational in that fight.
Heather Hardy didn't know how to defend leg kicks.
Right.
It was weird.
So that was, I think, was another nice
Who
upset.
Who thought in an MMA fight they do leg kicks?
Yeah.
The Elkins-Bektic fight, again, would be my overall pick. Like you said, if you just watch, if you didn't know, even know the odds, and you just watch the fight, you're a casual person watching the fight, you'd be like, this guy has no chance. You watch one round, you'd be like, this guy has no chance. He has the worst tattoo, maybe, yeah, in MMA. And
hey,
that's saying
something. Don't insult the damage.
But that's really bad.
It's not as bad as Belcher's. Belcher's is the all-time
worst. That's the
worst. The all-time worst.
I used to think that was Wayne Newton.
It looks like Fat Elvis. It looks like Elvis, like, in his last days.
Not Johnny Cash.
It does actually look a lot like Wayne Newton, now that you mention it.
But, Elkins, and for those who do know Elkins, that was like, oh, he's a stepping stone. They know him as a grinder. This guy, Bektic, is on the rise. Bektic's going to kill him. And then, the fight almost played out exactly as it should have until the very end. The other one I will mention is Volkan Uzdemir and Misha Serkinov.
Mm-hmm.
We know now it probably wasn't as big an upset as it looked like it was going to be, the odds may have said at the time. But Serkinov was so hot at the time, and then, Uzdemir had just squeaked by OSP, so people were like, what is this guy really? Like, it's a good win, good top 10 win, but how good is he actually? And they thought Serkinov was just going to finish continue his run of finishes, and then Uzdemir finishes him in the first round in lightning fast speed, and now we know he's a contender. But at the time, that was pretty big, so I'd put that up there as well.
Sandu, what you got?
I went for Rose knocking out Joanna. Look, at the end of the day, I always pick an undefeated fighter to win a fight. Unless, I see another fighter, prove me wrong and give that fighter their first loss, I will never ever pick against them. And the way Rose did it, first round, knockout, considering what was going on during fight week in New York, I know a lot of people look at, Joanna's, antics and kind of consider her to, be using kind of bully tactics and maybe stepping over the line. But I've been covering her from, her days over in Europe through Cage Warriors before she even got here. I was always high on her from day one. And I still actually think that, she's going to come back from this a better fighter. She doesn't have to worry about carrying that O now and that undefeated record. She's been one of the most dominant champions in recent years anyway, and that kind of what makes Rose's performance that much better on the biggest stage of them all in MSG in New York, pay-per-view. I honestly did not see it coming whatsoever. I thought that was like one of my locks of the night, is Joanna Jędrzejczyk to win. So for me, that's why Rose beating her is my upset of the year.
All I'm saying is a lot of people after that fight said that Joanna's behavior reminded them of Ronda before the Holly Holm fight. Nobody said that before the fight.
I'll disagree with that wholeheartedly.
Like, nobody said that.
Hindsight,
in my opinion,
Jesus Christ. People just look at it in a totally different way when they look back at antics like that. And why weren't you saying that before the fight,
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, whenever you go back and revisit, when I was kind of trying to go back and make sure I was an expert on the sport, and you'd go back, and I remember watching Dan Hardy and George St. Pierre, which is a fight. It's like, oh, George obviously won. But you don't know that context. Like, it's so hard to study that context. I don't know why I'm saying this, but reminded me of that.
But to your point, that's how Joanna's always been. Her thing leading up to fight is there's a fight before the fight, and that's the mental warfare. She's not trying to analyze any kind of personal history and trying to pick that apart and in the interviews and the build-up. She's genuinely just trying to break you down before you step in the octagon. That's all it is. She's not doing that as a promotional tactic, at the weigh-ins or the week of the fight to try to help pay-per-view points. If there's a residual impact of her antics helping with fan interest, then so be it. But that's just her 24/7, 365.
She did it with Esparza before her first title fight, when Esparza was the champion.
It'll be interesting to see if she does it again for either the rematch or whatever her next fight is. Because, will she tone it down after the backlash? I don't know.
Well, here's the crazy stat with all of these underdogs, and you're going to love this one. All of the fighters that we mentioned were bigger underdogs in mixed martial arts than Conor McGregor was in boxing against Floyd Mayweather, the best boxer of all time. We all should have gotten second mortgages and laughed our way to the bank. And there's no disrespect to Conor McGregor, but we're talking about the best person in any sport against somebody who's never done the sport before on a professional level. What were we thinking?
People were telling me, I'm just going to put some money on it. The odds were, for one, like you said, the odds weren't that
good. The odds weren't
as
that good.
They could have been.
They weren't that good.
They're like, I'm just going to splash $10 or something. I'm like,
splash $10 on Elkins.
I would say, you know what? Give me $10 and throw it out the window. I'll throw it out the window for you. Because it's the same thing. I don't care what the odds are.
Although when watching it, when Conor landed that big uppercut early on, I was like, oh my God, could they have been right? That show on Fox where they were saying he has a chance. Could it have been? No. Wow. Do people buy that? People say that Floyd carried him in that fight to make the fight more exciting. Do you guys buy that?
No. Floyd did what he always does.
I think he needs to warm up a little bit, I will say. But to say that he I don't know. The implication that carried him almost like in a pro wrestling match, that's a little, that's a bridge too far, I think.
I don't want to believe that either.
No, he grew into the fight.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He lets you go, you punch yourself out a little bit, then he destroys you. Yeah. It's typical Floyd.
It's like when people were saying that 12-round yawn.
fair.
That was an exciting fight. That was the most exciting Floyd fight there's been in like a decade.
Yeah, it was definitely intriguing. There's no question about that. Just watching it moment by moment, you're like, what is, well, the whole thing for me, it was absurd. It's still absurd, even talking about it, that it actually happened. And as it was happening, I was with friends, and I don't know if I blinked the whole time. I'm like, is this real? Like, how did this fight happen? Yeah. I was one of those people who said, it will never happen. I think after it was initially booked, I said, something will happen, it'll cancel it. And I don't know why I was fighting it so hard. And then when it eventually happened, I just was in absolute shock. And
it's a good reminder to never say never in this sport. Like, when there's money involved, and there's marketability, and people think that it's going to be a legitimate contest, just anything goes, really.
And it's why when Dana says never, it doesn't mean never either. Yeah. I mean,
well, it almost means will definitely happen, actually.
Yeah.
Well, with that particular fight, Conor versus Floyd, and I'd like to touch on this a little bit before we go on to our next topic. When I thought about it, like, the hardest part for me to wrap my head around is, like, what's this going to look like? And once they got in there, that was the best part for me. It's like, just the first few seconds of that fight was like, well, okay, this is happening now. What's going to happen? Like, when I'm sure that all of us, as people that cover MMA, when this fight was kind of batted around as an idea rather than a concept rather than a reality, I'm sure all of us were, you know, dead against it. Do you think that at the end of the day, it helped the UFC, it helped MMA, it raised the profile of the sport? Was it more positive than negative at the end of the day?
I don't see how it could really have hurt. I will just say, because I don't think, I would like to think, most people are smart enough to not have viewed it as simply a boxing versus MMA match, like as if Conor McGregor represents MMA. It had to have brought exposure to the sport. I think mostly positive, but if there's anybody out there that hadn't, you know, heard of MMA, they've almost certainly heard about it this year, you know, who's interested in sports and probably learned a little bit more about it. So I'm taking the most optimistic view you can and saying, yeah, net positive.
And it certainly helped Conor McGregor, but yes, as a residual impact of that, it's probably hurt the UFC, the lightweight division, you know, how things move forward. We still don't have any clarity on what's happening. So, you know, on a personal level for McGregor, great, fantastic. But for the UFC, for everybody else that loves the sport, the legitimacy of the actual, you know, lightweight division, it's definitely hurt it. You know, that lightweight belt has not been defended now for over a year. That's a problem. That's a huge, huge problem. And it's a problem that I hope is rectified sooner rather than later.
And just to add to that, you saw other fighters call out boxers after that. Stipe Miocic called out Anthony Joshua. Like, that's kind of the negative part of it, too, is that these, you know, the fighters are wanting better paydays, and they feel like if they call out a boxer that, you know, if Conor can do it, I can do it, but they don't realize they're not Conor McGregor.
Except for Cormier, who was like, I don't want to fight these guys. They'll kill me.
but like Alex said, I think, if anything, it helped boxing, too, because, you know, there was a bit, you know, the hardcore boxing fans are going to watch every fight, but I'm sure there's some that have been sort of jaded towards, the different weight classes and everything else. And it was kind of like an intriguing sort of thing. And so that kind of brought you. And then on the flip side, there's people who are like, boxing's a joke. How could they allow this? So, I mean, I can see both sides of it, but personally, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
So most of my friends are not hardcore MMA guys. I will say, I don't know a single one of them who has started tuning into MMA more regularly because of that fight. I know a lot of them who were really turned off by the casual, you know, hints of racism in the promotional cycles, certainly by Floyd Mayweather's homophobic language that he used on stage. I mean, I think short term it was a big payday and good for everyone. That is not how I want to sell the sport to people. That is not what I like about the sport. I want to show people George St. Pierre being a gentleman. I want to show Francis Ngannou talking about slavery in Libya. You know, like, there's so much to love about this sport. I think it showed off the worst colors of MMA. I think it was a net negative.
Interesting. Yeah, the crazy thing about it is, though, when you see the big numbers come in for that and the big numbers come in for UFC 217, it seems like those numbers don't stick around. Like, 218 was such a good card, and it was such a perfect way for the UFC to say, if you watched 217 and you loved it, and then you watched 218, you're in. But it seemed like the numbers tapered off again dramatically based on just the lack of star power. Like, what's it going to take for people to watch MMA, see amazing action, and then continuously stay put and tune in? Are there too many events? who knows? I mean, I don't know if that's
well,
an
you've
easy
seen the effects
answer.
Of it next year. I mean, look at some of the cards that are coming up next year. The lineups are a little bit weak. I mean, no offense to Duhu Choi and Jeremy Stevens, but on a Fox card headlining that, I think some people were
disappointed. That's not a Fox card.
It's a fight night, but I'm just saying in general, like, it's not, I don't know. There's people who are disappointed at that that main event. So, I mean, you're seeing that because they've used all their chips, you know, towards the end of the year.
Well, those people should not be disappointed. That's a hell of a main event. Well, let's continue to 2018. So, and I do want to comment on something. I saw somebody post online that you can't do one of these shows until after 2019 is done. Otherwise, it's not relevant. Well, I'm not spending my New Year's Eve with you gentlemen. I'm sorry. I like you guys, but I've got better things to do. Who will be the champions at this time next year? So I want to start with the women's strawweight division. We'll start with you, James. Who do you think is the champ when we do this podcast at this time next year? It's our fearless predictions. This is our look ahead to 2018 in the UFC.
Are we going to go by division and then do a circle?
Okay, let's go by division.
I think Joanna's going to get her title back next year. I think she'll get the rematch. I think she'll adjust accordingly, and I think she'll beat Rose.
Coastline, JJ.
I'm wondering if she's going to, you know what, I'm all in on the Cynthia Calvillo bandwagon for some reason.
Really?
I know we're not at our hot take section yet, spoiler, but I got a good feeling about Calvillo. I'm throwing it out there.
All right.
I'm just going to go off board. Jessica Andrade. I think Rose beats Joanna again, and Andrade was the obvious one, and for the sake of doing something different, I'm going to say she wins.
Like Danny, you're on to something. That was my exact scenario I have written down here. Jessica Andrade beats Rose after Rose defeats Joanna for a second time. Although, the interesting thing about that will be the weight cutting. I mean, Joanna's parted ways with perfecting athletes. We'll see what happens. And we'll see if she even wants to fight a strawweight again. I wouldn't be surprised if she says, I'm moving on to flyweight. That last weight cut was hell.
But it sounds like she's getting the rematch. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know.
And
that's the biggest fight they can put on in that division.
Yeah, it's true.
I think so, too. Absolutely. Women's flyweight. Let's start with you, Danny.
Let's not start with me.
All right.
I'm looking. I'm trying to.
Oh, okay. You don't have to sort it out yet? You haven't done your homework?
No,
okay,
sorry.
Why don't I start then? I'm going to say Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I think Jędrzejczyk's going to move up to flyweight, and she'll be the champion at the end of the year. Now, we've got people, other names that I'm not going to mention other names. We'll just let everybody have a turn. Go ahead, James.
Valentina Shevchenko. I think it's, you know, people saying, I've seen people say, you know, why are they talking about her in the title picture? I mean, she fought.
Really? Who's saying that?
I've seen
other
some.
Than Nico Montaño.
I've seen some people on Twitter say, she lost the title fight. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. She was, you know, she has the win over Holly Holm. She, you know, had a very, very, very close fight with Amanda Nunes in the rematch. To me, it's like the flyweight division, in my opinion, is such a gap between, you know, the fighters on the Ultimate Fighter and the fighters that were at strawweight or the ones at bantamweight that are dropping down. I Valentina is the only one out of that crop right now that has a fight book. She's the best fighter right now out of that crop. To me, I think, you know, she'll probably get a win here, and then from there she'll probably go on to fight for the title, and I think she'll win.
Yeah, I'm also going to say Shevchenko, and this is very interesting because I don't think Joanna Jędrzejczyk will ever be a flyweight champion. That's because of Shevchenko. I always thought it was a race to see who would get to that 125 division first, Shevchenko or JJ. Had Joanna Jędrzejczyk beat Rosanna Muniz, I thought she was a dead cert to fight the winner of the Ultimate Fighter. Now that she's lost, she's in a rematch, you would like to think Rose. And I think Shevchenko is going to be well on her way to be fighting for that title first. And if she gets there and she wins the fight, which I think she would, and become the champion, I think she's got Joanna Jędrzejczyk's number. She's got multiple wins against her. And I don't see that fight ever going to the ground or being a grappling contest. I think it's going to be a stand and bang fight. And I think that Shevchenko's going to do it to Joanna, in my opinion. So I think Joanna stays at strawweight, becomes the champion, and I think Shevchenko stays the will become the champion at 125.
It's amazing how much more interesting this division becomes when we start throwing names like Shevchenko and Jędrzejczyk around based on what we actually have in front of us. If you look at the rankings of who's in there, I said after that Alexis Davis Carmouche fight, or before the Alexis Davis Carmouche fight, the winner of this fight is going to be a top five flyweight, and the loser of this fight is going to be a top five flyweight. All right, Alex.
I got to stand up for my Ultimate Fighter ladies first a little bit. I thought the season took a little bit of flack. Yes, there were some inexperienced people, and the fact that it's the inexperienced people who made it through kind of made this talent look bad. But I think Mata Ferry is a top 10 flyweight, not counting it before you count Jędrzejczyk and Shevchenko, by the way. Before
top
you
10?
Put them in.
I'm a top 10 flyweight. There's nobody in the division.
Well, I mean, there was work in Invicta and some other promotions. Also, Barb Honchak, yes, she'd been gone for a while, but she was very much considered like a top 3 flyweight before she went in that hiatus for reasons that are still somewhat mysterious. And Montano beat both of them, and Lauren Murphy, who was a solid, you know, fighter in the UFC, probably not a top 10 flyweight.
Yeah, that's a pretty good resume so far. Actually,
I thought so,
Montano,
right?
Yeah.
And again, it's possible Montano was just the best acclimated to doing the 3 fights in 6 weeks thing, and under other circumstances, maybe would not have won those fights. Maybe wouldn't have beat Hontschak, right? But I will give her the credit for those wins. And do I think she could beat either Jacek or Shevchenko if they come
with
up
with a straight
year?
Face?
With a straight face, I'm going to say...
She could be the champion next year if she's injured, like if she just doesn't fight this year.
There you go, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to give her credit and say she is a growing property. And maybe by the time... Because I think she'll get a defense before she fights either of them, probably either against Eubanks, if Eubanks can make the weight, or against Paige VanZant, for whatever reason that happens. And then maybe by the time...
I'm saying whose face when you said that was great, but...
This will kind of tie in with some other stuff I think we're going to discuss later. But I will say, I'm going to go on a limb and say, Montaño is going to defend the belt against one of those two nicknames somehow. So I don't know how.
And only fight once this year?
I think she might fight twice. I think she might get lucky. I don't know. I'm going on a limb, and I'm just throwing Montaño out there.
Cool.
She'll keep the belt.
We'll see in a year. Who knows?
I love that Alex did that, because I want to be clear. I also cover the Calgary Stampeders, so I did not watch The Ultimate Fighter. I don't know any of these people. That's cool. Great answer. I really hope we get to see Joanna and Valentina Shevchenko fight, because that sounds like an awesome fight.
Yeah. Although I will say Eubanks looks like one heck of a prospect based on what I saw on the show. She's got like legit power for that division.
If she can make the weight.
If she can make the weight. Although I would move up to 135 if I were her. Yeah, if she's struggling to make the weight at 125.
She might be even better. Look at John Lineker. I mean, he had so much trouble making 125, and now he's been a force at 135.
Like, there aren't that many women with legit power at 135. Yeah. Like, look at 135, and the finishing rate there is not very high. So, who knows? Let's go to that division now. Women's bantamweight. You want to go ahead? We'll start with you, Danny. Are you doing recon? You want to hear what everybody else has to say first?
No. I mean, I don't think Amanda Nunes is losing her belt. Straight up, I put anyone against her in the division, and I think she wins, and she cleans out, and I think she's got a long title reign and is an incredible athlete, and I love watching her compete, so that's who I think is going
to
be champion.
And here's the thing to sort of add on that is, Raquel Pennington's injured. She's probably not going to be back till May. So, I mean, the fact that she was sort of the next one, and maybe there was a chance that she could have, done some damage, I just don't see anyone in that division that can dethrone Nunes. I think Shevchenko was the one to do it, and unfortunately it didn't go her way.
Ketlin Vieira is pretty good. Like, I'm not saying that in a tongue-in-cheek manner. Like, she could make some noise.
I want to see the return of Kat Zingano, but I just can't see Amanda Nunes losing the title next year. So, yeah, co-sign with Danny on that one as well.
I'm not going to disagree. I think Nunes is in her prime. She's so well-rounded, so powerful. The division is still kind of rebuilding after, the Rousey era. She's going to retain.
I'm with you guys. I think that she's a tough out, but I don't think she's an unbeatable champion, but I just don't see who's going to beat her in the division right now. So let's go to the Cyborg division. Does anybody see anybody aside from Cyborg being the champion 1 year from now at women's featherweight? I mean, Holm is a legit challenge, and a lot of people like Holly Holm. Put up your hand if you don't think Cyborg is going to be the champion, and we'll go to you.
Nope.
And our survey says...
Because I'm not sure there will be a division by the end of the year. Like, does it count if she retire as like if they retire the belt and she's the champion? Because is there even a division now, technically? It's such a
Cyborg division.
Yeah, the Cyborg division. It's
There's
such
no
an
rankings
odd thing, right?
It. Yeah.
So if for some reason by the end they just... But then again, I don't see like what they would do with her if they did retire the division.
Well,
so.
She's got one more fight after this. Okay. It's Megan Anderson, right?
Well,
I mean, that's got
to
happen at some point after the Holm fight. So that... it could delay things. But again, it has to be someone coming up from bantamweight. Like, there's no one outside. Like,
Nunes is who I think could beat her. If Nunes moves up to featherweight and there's nobody there for Nunes to fight, Nunes has a legit chance of beating Cyborg, in my opinion.
I think Holly has a legit chance of beating her. I just don't think she will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've got a great hot take for this, which I'm going to say for later, but I will come back to this. So let's keep that in mind. Cyborg, featherweight, what happens next? I've got a great hot take for that later on.
All right, cool. You're not going to come up with any weird stuff, are you? All right. Well, let's continue. Let's
go to. I hope he does.
Let's go to the flyweight division, and we can ask the same question. Does anybody see anybody beating Demetrius Johnson? I mean, we've got T.J. Dillashaw potential fight, I don't think that's out of the question. I think the odds are out actually, and the odds are pretty tight, if I'm not mistaken. I think Demetrius like minus 140.
If T.J. can actually make the weight, then I think T.J. can beat him. I think T.J. is the best fighter he'll ever have fought. So, I mean, other than maybe.
So, will you go out on a limb and say that that's what it's going to be for next year?
Yeah, in part because we get to talk about bantamweight next, and I love the bantamweight division so much that, sure, TJ, go win your second belt. Yeah, I think TJ can, if he can make the weight, which I'm not convinced that he can do, because then absolutely. I mean, TJ Dillashaw is, in my opinion, top 5 pound-for-pound guy in the world, fighting another top 5 pound-for-pound guy in the world. I don't think TJ is going to be able to take him down all that much, and at that point, I like TJ's striking
that's true.
In there. So, I mean, sure, TJ, we got to go out on a limb here. TJ Dillashaw will be the UFC flyweight champion at this time next year.
Demetrius minus 130 is the odds on that.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to say something interesting here. I personally think that I'm not going to make a pick in that fight, but I will say that if TJ does beat Demetrius, I wouldn't be surprised if TJ drops the title, goes back to bantamweights, defends there, and then DJ's the champion again at this time next year. So, like, I think it's an either-way situation. You might have Demetrius as the champion next year, win or lose to Dillashaw. Am I crazy to think that?
No, I think that's definitely a possibility.
And that's what my thought process was earlier. I was like, I can see TJ winning, but if TJ wins, I don't see him staying there. They're like, nobody's going to be like, oh, TJ needs to be Wilson Hayes to be like considered the top flyweight. No, it's like you made your statement. You've won titles in two divisions, and now you can go back to bantamweight where the real challenges are.
Here's the thing with that matchup. We often forget that, you know, styles make fights, and the reason that Garbrandt lost that fight to Dillashaw was because he wanted to brawl him. And you can't do that against a guy like Dillashaw who has knockout power. Demetrius Johnson is not going to brawl Dillashaw. He's going to be very strategic, and I think that we saw Dillashaw lose to a strategic guy in Dominic Cruz, and I think that, you know, we're going to see a similar type of game plan with Johnson facing Dillashaw, because he's not going to go out there and try and risk the knockout. Not only that, you know, I generally will always take the guy who's been in the weight class longer over a guy that's, you know, making the first fight down there. So I see Demetrius retaining, and, you know, I don't see anyone beating him. And the only way I think if, you know, he's not champ is if he just gives up the title.
I'm not even really arguing, but let's just note, Dillashaw barely lost to Cruz.
No, I agree. I thought Dillashaw won that fight, yeah. But that's what I'm saying is that, like, the fact that, you know, you have someone in Demetrius who's so smart when it comes to fights. I mean, here's a guy who armbarred Horiguchi with, like, a second left. Like, the fact that he's still going that hard till the end, I mean, it's, I don't know, you can't match that.
Just to add to that, first of all, I'm not convinced that TJ can make 125, mm-hmm. and even if he can...
I think he can. I don't think
looking at him cut weight for 135, I'm not convinced yet. If he can do it, great, good for him. But I think that the weight cut will be so incredibly tough on him that I don't think it's going to really help him in a 25-minute fight against DJ. So I don't think that he can beat him at 125.
I mean, he has said that he's dieted to a point where he can make walk around at 140. And if you can walk around at 140, cutting that last 15 pounds, I mean, but then again, that last pound or two is really the deciding.
And TJ's with perfecting athletes. Good to note too.
Is he?
Okay.
Yeah, Aaron, I agree with you. I think I'm actually very confident TJ will be able to make the weight. But I also agree with Jermak Kaur that the cut is going to be more significant than people think, and it will. It's not his ideal weight class. I know he can make it. 135 is clearly his ideal weight class. He's sensational. You know, he looks amazing at 135. Again, maybe
he's a smaller guy at 135 too.
Yeah, and you know, again, I'm just speculating, but I can't imagine 125 being his ideal weight class. It is DJ's ideal weight class. I think the fight is going to happen, and I am picking DJ to retain and to be the champion by the end of the year.
All right, this is another fun one, the featherweight division. Anybody think that Max Holloway gets dethroned this year at some point?
Wait, did we jump over bantamweight?
Did jump over bantamweight. Sorry, I saw Dillashaw's name and I got confused.
Oh, yeah.
Now let's go to bantamweight. We've got TJ Dillashaw as the champion. You go ahead, Danny.
I mean, literally, it could be Cody Garbrandt this time next year. It could be Dominic Cruz.
Could be Marlon Moraes.
It could be Jimmy Rivera. Like, there's a murderer's row in this division, and a year ago I didn't think that way, to be totally honest with you. So, I mean, I'm going to say, just for fun, let's go Jimmy Rivera, because he's just give the guy a little bit of a shout-out, even if I don't actually think he's going to be champion, because he's looked really, really good in his last couple fights. You know, his name is on other fighters' lips, because they all respect what he is as a fighter, and he's just a beast. So, have some fun, toss a new name in there. But again, any of those top five guys, and you can even, top five, I think any of them could be champion.
Mm-hmm. Except I would say that I don't believe Dos Anjos Sun Tzu has a very good shot. But continue, Alex.
I'm also going with Dillashaw, especially since, again, one of the title fights will be at flyweight. And we said, I think we all agree, win or lose, he's probably going to go back to bantamweight at least to try and defend that title again. And I think he'll successfully do it, whether it's against Garbrandt, Cruz, Rivera. So, I'm just going to stick with chalk and go with Dillashaw.
I'm going with Cody. The UFC are very high on him, so I don't think he's got too much work to do to get another title shot. Regardless of what happens with the TJ fighting DJ, I think all Cody needs to do is just win one fight, and then he'll get the next title shot when TJ does return to the division. I think he'll learn from that loss, and I think he'll make all the corrections he needs to. I'm still high on him, and so I think Cody will do it and be a champion this time next year.
I think Cody versus the winner of Rivera and Lineker's a no-brainer.
That makes sense.
He hasn't fought either of them.
Sure.
I just think that would be a good fight to make.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be Cody, only because he's going to be a father soon, so he's going to want to take some time off. And then, I know that Dillashaw is probably going to fight Johnson, but that's got to be at some point later this year because they've sort of announced a lot of the fights already. So we'll sort of see what happens there. But I have to go Dillashaw. I think even if for some reason they decide to put Cruz in there with Dillashaw again, I think Dillashaw will beat Cruz this time because, you know, a year older and, you know, another injury for Cruz, I mean, that's got to slow you down at some point. So for me, Dillashaw, I think, is the clear-cut guy. And I think even if he did fight Garbrandt again, I think Dillashaw would beat him again.
I'm with you guys. I think Dillashaw will be the champion this time next year, just for the reason that was mentioned with him fighting DJ. I think that he's not going to want to hold up the division after he beats DJ if he does win. And if he does, he'll go back to bantamweight and fight either Cody or Marlon Moraes, I think would be a great fight. And that's one guy that I think does have a shot of being the champion this time next year. And then there's also Rivera and Lineker. TJ's beaten Lineker. So if Lineker ends up beating Rivera, now really the only matchups to make for Dillashaw would be Cody or Marlon Moraes, and I think that both of those guys have a good shot of beating TJ, but I would lean TJ in both those fights. Max Holloway, before we jump the gun again, let's go back to the featherweight division. Anybody see anybody beating Max Holloway? I mean, featherweight's a stacked division. I don't want to take anything away from that division, but Holloway's going to be a tough out, and it'll be interesting to see.
It's a tough division, and there's a lot of contenders, but he's fought a lot of the contenders on his way up.
Who's to say if Swanson's going to, you know, I mean, Swanson probably won't get it because he just lost Ortega.
But a lot of these guys are emerging. Like, Ortega is a legit threat to him, and then you've got, you just saw Josh Emmett. Who knows? If Josh Emmett gets another win, he could be in the title mix based on these rankings that he has. He's, what, a top three guy now or top four?
It's not a knock on any of those guys to say that I think Max Holloway is going to be champion of the year. I think he's just that good, and I think, you know, he's got some wars with guys like Ortega coming up. I think Frankie Edgar's next.
There's only one guy younger than him in the top 15 also. Yeah,
that's like, insane.
He's just one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world.
I will say this. I think Holloway beats Edgar, and then I think he beats Ortega, and then I think that's it. I think he goes up to lightweight. You know, even though he did make the weight at 218, I mean, we saw him there. It was, you know, he had the chapped lips. He can't do that for much longer. I know the older you get, the harder it is to cut weight, and I think he'll go to lightweight by this time next year. He'll vacate the title and go up.
And I did read recently that Conor has his sights set on Holloway as a potential comeback fight.
Yeah, he's not going down. He's not going down.
No, Conor's not going down. Yeah. But I mean is Holloway could move up to lightweight.
How dare you guys count out Frankie Edgar? I am appalled.
I'm with you.
I will say this.
I don't want to count him out. I lean Holloway in that fight, but Holloway could easily lose that fight.
Frankie Edgar is personally my favorite fighter of all time. Mm-hmm. I do love Frankie Edgar. So, you know, we're talking about a guy who could have been the champion a few weeks ago, but not to take anything from Holloway. He's sensational. I'm just going to play a complete fanboy here and say Edgar will defeat him when that rematch does happen. I know it's not official yet, but I think that's the match to make next. And then he'll go on and defeat, I don't know, Ortega or whoever's lined up next. Who knows? Maybe Emmett, depending what Emmett does in his next fight. But yes, completely biased pick, Frankie Edgar champ by the end of 2018.
I can't go against Holloway. I think he's in his prime. He's putting on the best performances of his career. Nothing seems to be phasing him whatsoever. He just keeps getting better and better at every fight out. And I think, again, beating Jose Aldo twice in the same year is going to give him so much confidence as he starts his 2018 campaign. I can't see him getting beaten next year.
Yeah, like, I think Ortega's a great fighter, but I think stylistically that's not a good matchup for Ortega. Holloway. Holloway's not a guy that lets guys get too close to him to get them into precarious positions. I think anybody can be beaten, but I don't see a lot of people that I think Holloway needs to be too worried about. Frankie is going to be his toughest matchup ever. I think in terms of a matchup, in terms of a stylistic matchup, Edgar is probably a thing of nightmares for Holloway. He's going to be pushing the pace. His striking is fantastic. His wrestling's fantastic. That is a fight that, if I'm Holloway, I'm very worried about. And
you say that, though. You look at the Aldo fight. That, to me, is the catalyst of how to...
Styles make fights.
I agree. However, you've got the build. I mean, Holloway's a tall, lanky guy for that division. One of the problems that Edgar had in both Aldo fights, aside from the kicks, is getting on the inside. Is Holloway going to let him get there? I don't think so. I think you have a catalyst in Jose Aldo who, you know, showed the way to beat Frankie Edgar, and I think Holloway will be able to do it. You know, you can never count out Frankie Edgar, but that's just sort of the way I see it.
Yeah, 5 rounds with Frankie Edgar is no easy task for anybody. But I think Holloway will be the champion next year. I think that's a close fight. Well, we'll see how it goes. Lightweight division. This should be an interesting one. This is the one I'm most looking forward to. We'll start with you, James. Let's shake it up.
Tony Ferguson. I think even if Khabib makes the weight and beats Barbosa, I think, you know, just the fact that it seems like the cut's not an easy thing for him. You know, as far as the level of competition, you could argue, I know he has the win over RDA and everything, but I just think the level of competition that Ferguson has fought has been legit. I mean, to finish Kevin Lee like that, you know, Lee lost a fight before that. He was caught, but, you know, to go out there and finish him the way he did, I just think it's so hard to prepare for Tony Ferguson that I think he's going to give so many guys problems in that division. And I don't think Connor's coming back, and I'll get that, you know, into that in my hot take thing. But I think Ferguson holds that belt for a while, including next year.
Sandu?
Khabib Nurmagomedov, I think we're going to see the best of him next year. I think he's going to figure out the problems and the issues that he had to make the weight. We're going to find out next week if he can, which I think he will. Like I said before, I never pick against an undefeated fighter. Khabib Nurmagomedov is an undefeated fighter. I think
never lost a round.
Exactly. You know, when he makes the weight, I think he's the best lightweight in the world. And I think he'll figure out all the issues, figure out all the problems. What I can see happening is... I hope Conor comes back, unifies the title with Tony Ferguson. I think Tony Ferguson beats Conor McGregor. And then I think at some point next year, you see Ferguson and Khabib finally happen. And I think Khabib will have his number.
Alex?
I have to echo James here as far as I don't think Conor McGregor is coming back to the UFC lightweight division anytime soon, which makes Ferguson, for me, essentially the undisputed champion. And I think Ferguson's the man right now. I think he's the fan. I do hope we see the Nurmagomedov fight finally. I think it's the fight everyone wants to see. And in that case, I am picking Ferguson. But... yeah, it would be between Ferguson and Nurmagomedov, really. But I'm just going to lean towards the champ for now.
All right. Danny?
Yeah, I mean, I go with the champ as well. I do want to say about Khabib, and this is...
You go with the champ?
Love you, bud.
Conor McGregor?
I honestly, I just want Conor McGregor either gone, either fight or give up your belt. I'm so sick of it. I will get to that in a hot take as well. I will say, like, let's, like, acknowledge that Khabib, since 2014, has fought a guy who I don't even know is still in the UFC, and then Michael Johnson.
He lost
even...
last weekend. Daryl Horcher?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost to Holtzman, I think. Yeah.
There you go. And then Michael Johnson, who doesn't even fight at lightweight anymore. Let's, like, stop
He did beat Rafael Dos Anjos.
It was in 2014. I said since 2014. Okay. So, like, let's not sit here and pretend,
trash,
like...
other than Dos Anjos. I will say that.
Yeah. Abel Trujillo is another win, right?
With a 12 takedowns in the fight. Pat Healy.
He's incredible. We all like watching him. But, like, it's not like he's super battle-tested against these elite guys, especially not recently. So, I love you. All due respect. I just don't know how anyone can truly say that they think Khabib would beat Tony Ferguson.
Get him. You're going
Tony
Ferguson?
Oh, 100% Ferguson. But my main thing is just get Conor out of there.
Well, me and Danny are both going to be in Vegas next week. So when Khabib destroys Edson Barboza, let's have another chat over a few beers and we'll talk about that.
Okay. Stakes is high. All right, I like this. This is good. All right, I'm also going to go with Tony Ferguson. I just think that he ends up fighting Conor and beating Conor. And I also think that just stylistically, he's a really bad matchup for Khabib. Like, Khabib will get in his guard, and that's a very dark place to be if you're a fighter. Ferguson's so dangerous off his back. He just has so many more paths to victory over Khabib than Khabib would have over him. Do I think that Khabib can beat Ferguson? Absolutely. I think that Khabib can beat anybody. He's, again, hasn't lost a round in the UFC. His wrestling might be the best in all of the UFC. But I personally think Tony Ferguson is the champion at this time next year. And I think that he does fight Conor and beat Conor. Because I think that Conor likes to do the things that people think he can't. You know, that he's not able to do. People say, I don't think he's going to defend his title. He's never defended a belt. That might put a chip on Conor's shoulder. An interesting note, on Conor's Instagram, there was a picture of him training for the first time in 2 months.
And this is exactly why he fought Mayweather, right? Because people thought he couldn't beat Mayweather. Yeah. So that's the fight they made, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not the money.
Money might have played a factor, yeah.
Or Frankie Edgar. I mean, fans wanted him to fight him, and he never fought Edgar at featherweight.
That's
so
true.
So we'll see.
All right. Welterweight. Go ahead.
It's a tough one. Let's go.
By the way, hold on. Before you start, we keep saying we'll get to that in our hot takes. I should mention one of the future categories that we will be discussing later are our three hot takes from mild to suicide. Two, three-star hot takes. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I'm looking. I mean, RDA, Tyron is probably, what, April or May at this point?
Hopefully.
If not later. So
yeah, hopefully.
I mean,
it's RDA, Tyron. We'll see.
Yeah.
It could be your boy, Colby Covington versus...
I hope Colby Covington gets cut. I really do. I don't want him in the UFC.
That's one of his hot takes that he won't even have in his hot takes.
Whatever. I'm trying to talk myself into a way for Darren Till to get a title shot just because I want to go crazy here. At this point, let's say, I don't know, RDA. Darren Till is my long shot. If he, you know, they give him Thompson, he beats Thompson. Throw him into a title fight, and I think he probably gets destroyed. But, There you go. Okay, I said it. RDA. I think he looked amazing against Robbie Lawler. And Tyron's ability to do absolutely nothing in a fight is honestly just incredible. And I just want to applaud him for 10 rounds of fighting that I'll never get back having watched this this year. But, yeah, so RDA.
Alexander K. Lee.
I think Rafael Dos Anjos is definitely the most fun answer. He's had such a great year. He seems like such a decent man, and I really like RDA. But I'm going to lean towards Woodley. In fact, you know, you'll find, and again, this is related to the takes later. You'll find I'll lean towards the champs mostly, the champs who are already the current champs. Yeah, his fighting style in the last two fights has been horrible. You know, people like to compare him to GSP, and I'm like, no. GSP was like dominant in a lot of those wins that people didn't find it. Like they may have been cool takedowns. Yeah,
you know?
They may have been methodical, yeah. But he left no doubt that he was the.
He was always in the offensive.
Yes,
yeah.
Woodley. I don't know how you want to judge some of those fights because almost nothing happened, mm-hmm. But I do think he's such a talented guy. He's also very intelligent, and unfortunately, that's led to him fighting as safe as possible. And I think that will work against RDA. RDA can put on the pressure for sure, assuming this fight happens. And I think it'll work against a lot of the other guys in the top 10. So sadly, I think the reign of Woodley continues.
I secretly agree with you, but
I'm in the same boat, I think. But yeah, only as Danny.
I'm going to co-sign a lot of what Danny said. Darren Till gets a title shot next year, I would be picking him to be the champion this time next year. But what I think is going to happen with Darren Till is I think he'll get a few fights, and I think that's going to prep him up for a title shot in 2019. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, and that reason alone, I'm going with RDA. Having seen him firsthand just a few days ago in Winnipeg, I was completely blown away by his performance. I think he's the atypical kind of case study of someone that isn't cutting a lot of weight, and the proof is in the pudding. His last three performances at welterweight have been just breathtaking, and he's putting it all together now in this new weight class. Yes, he's the smaller welterweight, but he makes up for that in kind of like speed, agility, technique, footwork, and everything else that goes along with his overall game. And plus, you know, he's in his kind of like mid-30s now. He's a veteran. He's, you know, got a lot of kind of wisdom and savviness in the octagon. And I think, you know, if he kind of, like, he was fighting in the pocket with Robbie Lawler, for God's sakes. If he can do something like that and push, you know, Woodley against the cage, you know, I think, you know, he'll put Woodley under a lot of pressure, which I don't think Tyron would be able to handle. And so I think, you know, barring Darren Till out of the equation, just because I don't think even if he wins a few times next year, he'll get a title shot. Next year, at least, that's why I'm going with RDA for this time next year as a welterweight champion.
And that 30-second flurry he unleashed on, like, Lawler would have finished anyone except Lawler, I feel like.
Exactly.
Almost anyone in the welterweight division. Except, right. I mean, Lawler's impossible to put down. So.
James?
Tyron Woodley's going to remain champ. Reason is, and I'm going to go, this could, you know, maybe go out in the hot take thing. I think Colby Covington's going to fight him next.
I think it's very possible.
And I think there's been rumblings.
Accepted, yeah, Ultimate Fighter coach. Yeah.
This might sound ridiculous now, but there have been rumblings about possible Ultimate Fighter coaches being Woodley and Covington. And it makes sense because Woodley's going to be out. He can't fight. He's going to get that surgery he's been talking about. Covington, you know, as much as, you know, people hate him.
The worst thing the UFC could do is reward
we're talking about him. I mean, if someone else had beaten Damian Maia by decision, we wouldn't even be talking about mm-hmm. them. If it was Kamaru Usman to beat him, we wouldn't even be talking about it. But the fact that Covington has kept himself relevant with everyone, he was picking a fight with Chase Sherman the other day on Twitter. I mean, this guy has no bounds. The UFC takes note of stuff like that. I think there's so many people who hate Covington and there's people who love his shtick that they'll want to see him get that title shot. And if Woodley fights him, I think Woodley's a better wrestler and I think he beats him.
But
so that's why.
He's 8-1
but
the
there
UFC
should
too.
Be boundaries. One. People should have boundaries. You shouldn't be calling a developing country the people there a bunch of dirty animals. If the UFC rewards that sort of behavior and says all you have to do is get people talking, they are going down.
I think we know they don't care. I mean, Connor had a, you know, homophobic slur and there was very little backlash from that. I mean, I just think if it's going to sell tickets, unfortunately, that's the business we're in. I mean, it's just the reality of it, unfortunately. It would be great if we had model citizens like George St. Pierre representing the sport in every division, but we don't have that. And then you have guys like Covington and it creates a narrative similar to what Chael Sonnen was doing years ago. And that's where this becomes an entertainment business and people get title shots. And that's why I think Covington gets the shot.
I hope Covington wins the title just so I can see Danny's face.
And just because it'll be quick journalism.
It'll be entertaining.
What's funny is if you go back, when Colby Covington was on his way up, like literally until he decided to do this weird heel turn, I loved him as a fighter. I loved him as an interviewer. And then just like 8 months ago, he got impatient, and I'm disgusted by it.
Good, his heel turn's working then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not going to... I'm not going to pay for to watch him fight. I will never pay to watch him fight. I mean, I get, you know, I wouldn't have voted for Trump either, and that didn't work. I wouldn't have voted for Brexit. I, you know, my opinion seemed to lose these days, but I don't know. It grosses me out, and, you know, I think that the UFC long term should make sure that that type of behavior is punished and not rewarded.
The thing with Colby is, like, you know, it's clear that he's doing the pro wrestling shtick. Now, the thing is, he's not exactly doing it with the finesse of a Chael Sonnen, right?
That's true. It seems forced.
It seems forced. He's bumbling through it here and there. But you can't deny that he is right now the most hated man in the UFC. No, any division, you know, you name it, he is the most hated guy. And the thing is, you know, the one thing that you don't want to be in the UFC is you don't want to be indifferent. You want to be loved or you want to be hated. Ideally, you got a bit of both. And fortunately or unfortunately, that's what's going to get him a title shot in the UFC, I predict. You know, yeah. I think he'll get it. So, yeah, just want to say that.
I think he would have gotten a title shot in within a year and a half.
I don't know. I disagree.
Colby's won all his fights by decision. I just didn't think it was a reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, had he finished Maya, a different story. But and one thing I will just say quickly, he had a good line, Kenny Florin. I don't know if you saw that line where he talked about Kenny's like, maybe I can be like you and get a title shot after beating Kit Cope and Sam Stout. That was good. I got to give him that.
I will say, you know, other than the Maya win, like, why does Covington get this exposure instead of Usman or Ponzinibbio, right? He has a hook. He has a character we know. I couldn't tell you a lot about Kamaru Usman other than he was on The Ultimate Fighter. He won The Ultimate Fighter. Other than that, I don't know anything about Usman's personality. I don't. I do know Covington's personality. I wish I didn't, but I do know what it is. Ponzinibbio, he pokes people in the eye. I don't know anything else about him. He was also on The Ultimate Fighter. And if that's the only thing I can say about these guys, that's not a compelling draw for people as opposed to Covington, who at least you have the, oh, I hate him so much, I want to pay to see him get beaten up. And that is the sad reality of it.
Well, I'm going to go with Dos Anjos also, but I will say if Kamaru Usman somehow manages to get a title shot, like if he just wins and works his way up there, he'll be the champion.
Yeah, he's
very legit.
I think
he's that good. Let's go to the middleweight division, where I've got a pretty interesting answer, but we'll start with you, Danny.
Luke Rockhold.
All right.
I flat out, I think he messed up against Bisping, got hit, got knocked out, but I think he's been the best middleweight in the world for the last 5 years, and I think, you know, he's going to get on top of Whitaker, who's, I'm not trying to take away from Whitaker, I just think Rockhold's that good, and he's going to do what he always does and just beat the hell out of him. I think Luke Rockhold beats anyone if he's, you know, got his head in the right place going into the fight.
Okay, Alex?
I'm going to, sticking with champs, sticking with Whitaker, I think he will be able to avoid the takedowns of Rockhold somehow. Maybe survive early on and then maybe avoid them entirely as the fight goes on, and hopefully he maybe has a better gas tank than Rockhold. But again, I you know, it's probably a little too early to start thinking exactly how that fight's going to turn out. Just picking Whitaker, I think he will beat Rockhold, and then after that, there's some good fighters, but I don't see, you know, he's in his prime. It's one of those cases where I think the guy's in his prime. He's got the skill set he needs right now. I think he's the champion by the end of 2018.
Nice. Yeah. Sandu?
I agree. Again, it's one of those fighters that has benefited greatly from moving up a weight class. He's not cutting that much weight to hit the 185 limit. I was so blown away with that Yoel Romero performance. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That was one of the performances of the year, no doubt. For him to finally get the opportunity to you know, not even unify, I suppose he's like by default the official champion, right? To defend that title, you know, in his home country, I'm sure it's going to mean a lot to him. He kind of just like, he's a mild-mannered kind of guy, just kind of gets on with his business, and he's in his prime, you know, he's vicious, and I think he's got an overhand left or an overhand right for Rockhold's chin, and if Michael Bisping can knock him out, then trust me, Robert Whitaker can knock him out as well.
All right.
I was completely on Danny's side, you know, until I saw that David Branch fight, to be honest. And Branch hit him a couple times, and that's where I'm like, this guy has completely abandoned any sort of defensive stand-up. And it was scary. I mean, it's like he didn't learn from the Bisping fight. He, you know, Rockhold has a great build for that division, and in reality, he should be a light heavyweight. I mean, just the way he's built, but he can make the weight. But I think that in some ways, he's almost gotten worse as far as like falling in love with his striking. And I think if, you know, if David Branch hits you and you brush it off, that's one thing. But if Robert Whitaker hits you, you're going out. And unfortunately, even though I do think Rockhold is probably the better fighter, I think all Whitaker has to do over five rounds is hit him. And I think if he does, he'll go down. And that's why I think Whitaker retains. And I think after that, I mean, who knows? Is it Calvin Gaslam? Is it Weidman? Who knows who's gonna fight him? But I think there's such a huge difference between the top two guys in Rockhold and Whitaker than everyone else.
Yeah, that Branch example is a good one, because how many guys has Branch dropped in like the last couple of years? Like,
yeah.
Barely anybody.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that with Whitaker and Rockhold. That, like, personally, I think Rockhold is just a way better fighter than Whitaker.
Is.
but you have to trust his chin.
Yeah.
Like, I think that if Whitaker touches him once, like, we're talking about a five-round fight, it's over. But that being said, if Rockhold gets him to the ground, it's probably over, too. Rockhold will be much bigger, and he's probably the most dangerous guy on the ground in the UFC. He's fantastic. But I'm going to go a little bit off the board. I think Kelvin Gastelum could be the champ this time next year.
Interesting.
And it's just a matchup thing. You know, I think I know that Weidman beat Gastelum, but I think if Gastelum is able to beat one more guy, get a title shot against Whitaker, that's a bad matchup for Whitaker. I think they're very similar fighters. I give Gastelum the edge in wrestling, and I think that in terms of striking, Gastelum's got an iron chin. I don't think he's going to get dropped, and I think that he can hang with Whitaker in a five-round fight. So I'm going to say Kelvin Gastelum. I know it's a little bit off the board, but I think my line of thinking makes a little bit of sense. Maybe, maybe.
I think he's too small, but I like it anyways, so I support
Well, Whitaker's
you.
Small, too. Whitaker's not a big guy at middleweight. All right.
I think we saw in the Weidman fight, that's sort of that when he's really up against one of those big middleweights, there's trouble. But, I mean, I like that you went off the board, so I don't want to criticize it.
Yeah. Another interesting division, we got light heavyweight. I mean, there's not that many guys to choose from, but we'll start with you, Danny.
Alexander Gustafsson is my champion this time next year. Yeah, I think whoever wins in Boston in January, Gustafsson's the obvious guy. I think Gustafsson gave Cormier an amazing fight when they first fought in Houston, and he looked so good against Teixeira. And, you know, he's always been one of those top two or three guys at any one time, and arguably, why not? I mean, I think Gustafsson is an elite fighter and is the guy who deserves a title shot. So I think if he gets a title shot, he can win it.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
I was actually going to pick Gustafsson as well. Like I said, I do think he'd win a Cormier rematch. But you know what? Why don't we just say John Jones comes back again? He finds a way to beat. He finds
know.
A way to beat the system.
Not out of the
some loophole. He's back. Give him another chance. This time he's changed. This time he's a changed man. He comes back again. He beats again either Cormier or Uzdemir or Gustafsson, whoever has the title, just near the end of the year, and then we ring in 2019 with finally he's put it all together, John Jones.
If that happens, I guarantee New Year's Eve we're all gonna get. Look down at the front, and there's going to be an announcement from the UFC, a statement about how John Jones has done something wrong. It's going to ruin my New Year's.
Yeah, Daniel Cormier is the best light heavyweight not named John Jones, and as long as John Jones is out of the equation, I don't think anyone's going to beat Daniel Cormier next year. I'd love to see the Gustafsson fight again.
He's going to slow, like, he's almost 40.
He has to slow down.
He's slowing down.
Listen, he's not going to be around forever, but I think he's still got enough gas in the tank to beat the guys that are in the division at the moment. That Gustafsson fight would be I would love to see that again, because I would give Gustafsson a chance. But kind of, you know, he may be older, but again, you know, he's got so much experience. He's a veteran of the sport. He knows, and the guys that he trains, he's now training back again with Cain Velasquez after such a long time as well. That's going to be a huge factor for a couple of weeks,
probably, or so.
Well, yeah. I think DC is still going to be champion this time next year.
He looked good against Jones, too. Let's not forget that. He looked good against Jones, right?
I'm going Volkan Uzdemir as the champion this time next year, but in a bit of a different scenario. I think Cormier beats Uzdemir in Boston for that fight. I think after that, Cormier gets one more fight, whether it's Glover, whether it's Alexander Gustafsson, and then he retires. He says, that's it, I'm done. You know, he's getting older. I think the analyst stuff's going well.
It could be vacant
here. That's what I'm getting at, is that I think that he beats Uzdemir, and then he ends up vacating the title at some point. And then whoever, if it's, you know, Gustafsson and Uzdemir, if it's, Teixeira and whoever, I think that Volkan will eventually win it, because I think Volkan's right there, and I think he ends up winning what will be a vacant title at that point. Because I think Cormier, I mean, he took a lot. That was a brutal knockout, him losing to Jones, and I think at that age and to lose the way he did, I think that it's tough for him to even come back and defend this title. So, but I do think that Cormier's wrestling will be able to sort of neutralize Volkan in that fight. So I'm picking him to beat Volkan, but I think Volkan will beat whoever else for a vacant title.
It's crazy that in arguably the shallowest division in the UFC in terms of contenders, we've all picked someone different.
Yeah, four different answers. Yeah. Except I'm going to break that trend, because I'm going to go with Alexander Gustafsson as well with Danny. I'm with Danny when he says I think that Cormier's just got more miles on him this time around. He got knocked out by Jones, and let's not pretend that fight didn't happen. It happened. He did get knocked out. And then you look at how Gustafsson looked against Glover Teixeira, the Glover Teixeira we saw just dominate Misha Cirkunov over the weekend. I won't say dominate. It's a little bit of an overstatement. But beat Misha Cirkunov over the weekend. Now, it's hard to really say how good Misha Cirkunov is now that we've seen him lose two in a row. But I just don't see, and I think Ozdemir is good. I think he's legit, but if you look at like how well-rounded Gustafsson is, I know he's taken one on the chin with Anthony Johnson, so if Ozdemir catches him, he could beat him, but I just think that he's the best guy at light heavyweight right now.
I also think that Cormier-Gustafsson, that first fight, is one of like the tragically most forgotten all-time classics not by in me. UFC history. That yeah, fight was that amazing. Fight, yeah. It was like a heroic performance by Cormier to overcome. He nearly got knocked out by a head kick in that one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't watched that fight in a while, go back and watch it.
I would
it.
Like
it's
to.
Incredible.
I need to. That fight happened on my honeymoon. I had to watch the replay. It wasn't the same. You know when you always watch a fight after? It's
did you
not
know? Do you know the result?
I knew the result, unfortunately. You can't. You
it's
know,
hard to avoid.
The only thing about Gustafsson that I will say is that he's coming off a pretty serious shoulder injury. He's just now getting into his rehab. But he doesn't fight consistently, and there's something to be said about ring rust. Like, if he doesn't fight until the summer or the end
didn't
of the
year. Didn't you pick Khabib to be lightweight champion?
Like I said, we're going to have a conversation, Danny, in about a week from now in Las Vegas over some beers, and we'll have that conversation, all right?
I'm telling you guys, Volkan's the guy to go with.
All right, heavyweight. I think a lot of us are going to have the same answer, and I'm not going to start with Danny because I know his, so I'm going to start with you, James.
Stipe, and I think it's because Stipe beats Ngannou. I think people are vastly overlooking Stipe in that fight, and, you know, it's very... Ngannou has done the best he can possibly do with the competition put in front of him, but we can't ignore the fact that the two guys he just beat to get that title shot in Arlovski and Overeem are the two most knocked out guys in that heavyweight division. And Stipe's beat everyone convincingly. He's beat legit guys. He beat, you know, Junior Dos Santos in the rematch. I mean, there's no question that Stipe's the best. And I think his speed will be the factor over five rounds. We haven't seen Ngannou go, you know, a full five rounds.
So go full three rounds.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that Stipe will be champ. And I don't even know who's next after this if he beats Ngannou because it's really sort of up in the air. Maybe, I don't know. But Stipe's the champ.
Yeah, I guess everyone's going to have like one or two choices here. I'm going with Francis Ngannou. I think he beats Stipe Miocic. He's just the scariest heavyweight I've seen maybe ever. And there's just something about him. He's got a special aura about him. I think he's starting to put it together. It's crazy to think that it was only about 3 or 4 years ago where he didn't even know how to fight in MMA. And look at him now. And just to see him now at the Performance Institute, you know, taking full advantage of everything that the UFC has to offer there. And I don't know, you know, look, I love Miocic, you know, the fact that this guy is still a part-time firefighter, or take my hat off to him. But yeah, I think Francis Ngannou is going to have his number.
Alex?
My brain says Stipe, actually. You know, we don't even talk about the rest of it. Stipe can take people down. He's got some ground game, right? He's shown it before. But the part of me that loves chaos is going to say Ngannou, and once again, we will not see the heavyweight title defended more than two times by Miocic. You know, that record will stay tied amongst all those heavyweights who have done that.
Yeah, but I think Ngannou wins, will he be able to defend it more than twice?
I think he'll beat maybe Werdum, maybe Hunt next year or something like that, some combination of those guys, and then he'll lose to someone else in 2019.
Curtis Blaydes.
Curtis Blaydes. Who knows?
Avengers loss.
Yeah, the rematch. Yeah,
Danny's your favorite. Yeah,
I mean,
guy
it's like it's borderline unprofessional how much I like Francis. Like, there's no cheering in the press box, and I was in Africa earlier this year for a month. I love Africa, and I think it's really exciting to have a, you know, transcendent African athlete. I think he's the best story in sports anywhere right now. I mean, he was literally fleeing Cameroon in 2013, and now he's getting. I find it riveting. I love listening to him speak. I think he's an interesting man. He's super intelligent. The power. Like, I can't look at it objectively. I just really, he terrifies me. I don't know. There's a part of me that can't even break it down. I think he's just going to go in and swing. And Stipe's probably a good enough fighter to avoid it, but like no one else has been. And he nearly took off Overeem's head. He might have been knocked. Like, he might be the most knocked out guy in the division, but like that would have knocked out a rhinoceros, man.
And don't forget, you know, Miocic was rocked by Overeem. So if he can get rocked by Overeem, all Ngannou needs to do is go 50%.
I'm all in on Francis Ngannou. That's all. Like, I hope that he's the champion because I think it's the best thing for the sport. He's my champion.
Yeah, I was leaning Stipe against Ngannou before Ngannou fought Overeem. I figured Ngannou was going to beat Overeem. I just didn't think it was going to be like that. Like, I mean, that kind of power is crazy. And Overeem is a very smart fighter. We've seen in recent years Overeem really smarting up how he fights. And he just got...
But he's slow. That's the thing. Stipe's very fast.
Quick. He's got good footwork. I agree.
I mean, look
at
what he did to Werdum when he came in and caught him. I mean, no one's done that to Werdum as well. I think... listen, I was absolutely blown away by Francis Ngannou. And I agree with you guys. If he was heavyweight champion, it would be awesome. But... Stipe's resume speaks
like
for itself.
If Stipe had a better chin, like, I mean, it's
I mean,
heavyweight.
To
it's
say
heavyweight,
that he has a bad chin.
Yeah, it's not that he has a bad chin. Also, I
mean,
agree with
even
you.
The fight, even
chin.
The fight that he lost to Stefan Struve years ago, I mean, that was a fight he was winning.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and you know, Junior Dos Santos didn't knock him out back when he was doing a lot better.
But like, it's like what Sandu said. Like, if Overeem can knock him down, Ngannou can knock him out. We'll see. I mean, I don't want to write off Stipe. I think that Stipe is a like a phenomenal.
He's the underdog right now. Stipe's the underdog.
I want to be clear. I think we're getting a trilogy between the three of them.
Oh,
between
I hope so.
The two of them. Like, I think that it can go both ways and probably will. I just think Ngannou wins this fight and then.
Yeah, and then we'll see. Yeah. Could be an instant rematch. It depends how it goes, right? If it's like a classic, who knows?
Yeah.
All right. We're running. We've been going about 90 minutes here, so let's breeze through these one star, two star, and three star hot takes. Give us yours one at a time. Maybe we'll discuss briefly, but we should move it along.
Okay, I'll be quick here. One star, meaning like kind of lowest, would be Toronto gets snubbed for UFC event next year. I think Montreal gets it, and they'll pick or choose. Second star is George St. Pierre does not fight next year and potentially never again. And number three, Conor McGregor takes another boxing match. That's my three star one.
Wow. All right.
My one star is the UFC re-signs its deal with Fox. My two star is John Jones gets less than a year suspension and he fights again in the summer, the MSG event or end of year card. And my three star one is the UFC, or under the Zuffa umbrella, will hold its first boxing event, which will include a current UFC fighter, perhaps one of the champions. And that's why I want to revert back to what I was saying earlier on about Chris Cyborg. She goes ahead. She beats Holly Holm. What do you do with her while you kind of try to fill out the rest of the division? You put her in a boxing match, maybe Clarissa Shields.
Guys, nice. Dana like said that. It wasn't going to happen with UFC fighters fighting super boxing, so let's move on. That's why it's a three-star take. I hear you. It's not very out there. All right, Alex.
I'm glad that we don't have a lot of time to talk about these because I don't want to have to justify them. one star, I would say, I don't think we're going to see a champion defend more than twice again. We didn't have it last in 2017. I think the way the climate is, you're going to have people taking time off, more time off, looking for better pay, hopefully getting the better pay. And I'm not saying.
Didn't Woodley do it three times this year?
I thought the one of them was.
No, it was three. Because Wonderboy twice. Yeah. And then.
No, Wonderboy was November. Was
that, oh, yeah, sorry. That's right. Yeah.
So he only defended
Wonderboy,
twice.
Wonderboy, Maya.
That's it.
Yeah, it was just Wonderboy and Maya. You're right.
So none of the champions defended more than twice. And I'm not saying that's never going to happen again. I just think this year that trend is going to continue. So that's kind of a bummer. But, and again, also with people fighting in other divisions, things like that. So the two star take, I'll say, I think we're going to see one top ranked fighter. I can't name who. Retire in their prime unexpectedly. I think it could be like a Jacek, could be a Tyron Woodley, could be a Nurmagomedov, unfortunately. But just, I got a weird vibe that some dissatisfaction is going to bubble over. And
Cain Velasquez.
Yeah, and Jacek a couple years ago said she was only going to stick around for a couple years.
Who knows? And then the third take, if you're going to love this, Ronda Rousey will, I'm not saying she'll fight, she will have a fight, announce her return, and will have a fight booked either for the end of 2018 or 2019 after she's done with her WWE stuff.
All right. I like it. I hope she does come back. I'd like to see Ronda fight again.
I don't know if this is so much a hot take as just something that I wish. I wish Colby Covington looks absolutely terrible getting wrecked by Rory McDonald for the Bellator title. because he gets cut. Number two, this is kind of a response to James. Toronto can't be snubbed because it hosted a event last year when Calgary hasn't hosted since 2012. If any city is getting snubbed every time the UFC comes to Canada and does not
he
go
owes
to Calgary.
Them. UFC owes, owes Calgary.
He's going to bring a blockbuster. Calgary is the only city that can possibly be snubbed at this point in Canada when there's an event. And number three, Conor McGregor never fights again. Keep it simple.
All right. Yeah. My one-star take, which Alex is going to dislike, nobody from The Ultimate Fighter or a champion this crown season is ranked in the top five at flyweight at this time next year. That's my one-star take, and that's a one-star. Yeah. Two-star take, the UFC includes some numbered events as part of their new TV deal, so the pay-per-view model gets shifted a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
And the three-star, Conor McGregor vacates the lightweight title to fight George St. Pierre or Tyron Woodley during International Fight Week, either going for a third belt or a gigantic money fight with GSP. And those are my three takes.
I think that fight's going to happen. See, I didn't include that. I think that's not even a hot take anymore. I think if McGregor ever fights again in the UFC, I think he's got to go GSP. Even though he knows he'll probably get killed in that fight. The money, it's the last huge.
He'll get more money in boxing. That's why I think he goes to boxing. Yes. You know, this Pacquiao stuff, this Malignaggi, whatever, I think it's going to happen, unfortunately. I don't want to see it. I want Conor to fight Tony Ferguson.
Well, Conor recently said he's going to do MMA, like he wants to do MMA.
Conor says a lot of things.
If he does MMA, he's doing George and then the third Nate fight.
Yeah, he sees the dollar signs in the big name fights. I think it's Nate. Yeah, it's either Nate or George. I don't see anyone else. He's not fighting Tony Ferguson, and he's sure as hell not fighting Khabib.
All right, and to wrap it up, the fight you're most looking forward to in 2018, I think I know Danny's answer, but you go ahead, Danny.
No, you know what? I already said that, so I'll just toss out that I would really, really like to see Darren Till and Stephen Wonderboy.
Oh, is that
Thompson.
The one? Okay.
I don't know. Like it's Ngannou, Stipe. It's clearly my number one, but my number two, since I already talked about that, I think Darren Till and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is an amazing high-level MMA fight.
All right. Alex.
Edgar Holloway. Let's make it happen. Why is this not official already? Let's go. Come on. Let's get this.
Trying to get in Hawaii, probably, I think.
Hey, I'm sure Frankie would love the vacation. So, Edgar Holloway.
Yeah, Conor McGregor, GSP. I love big blockbuster fights. I want to see Conor McGregor come back and defend his title against Tony Ferguson. Win or lose after that, once he's been able to do that. If he loses, fine. At least in the lightweight division can move forward and he can go and have his big money fights. At least if he defends and unifies the title, then okay, fine, do what you want to do. And for that, it has to be the GSP fight. It would be the biggest, pay-per-view of all time in UFC history, in my opinion. And if he can't, or if he won't go the boxing route, which James mentioned, to get that big payday, the second route, or the second best option to get the biggest payday in the UFC is the GSP fight. And I'd love to see that happen at some point, maybe International Fight Week, or maybe the MSG card in New York. That would be a fitting home for that kind of fight. So that's the fight I think we'll get booked next year, and the fight that I'd be most looking forward to, just considering how much I love big blockbuster events.
All right, James.
Got to echo Danny. Stipe and Ngannou. The last time we saw a heavyweight fight this competitive, in my opinion, we'd have to go all the way back to Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, the first fight. That was, to me, you had two of the best guys in their prime going against each other, and that's what I see happening here. But I do want to give an honorable mention, because we're only talking about UFC here. Rory McDonald and Douglas Lima is going to be a great fight, and I cannot ignore that one either outside the UFC. I can't wait for that one.
I'm going to go with the interim and official title being amalgamated in Conor McGregor versus Tony Ferguson. Mm. It's a fight that should happen, and it's a fight that I'd really like to see happen, because I think that Ferguson has established himself as the best guy at lightweight. I think that Conor has a shot against Ferguson. Don't get me wrong. Conor's got one-punch power at lightweight. He could knock Ferguson out. Then again, I don't think we've seen Ferguson get knocked out, and I don't think it's very likely. But that's the fight I'm most looking forward to as a potential fight for 2018. And I want to thank you guys. I mean, this was a lot of fun. It'll be fun to go back next year and look at what we said and how foolish I'm sure some of us will look. But that's just how you risk it when you want to make great podcasts and radio.
I love it. I think we've really killed this, guys.
Yeah, we did. Aaron, if I'm not mistaken, this is maybe the third time we've done an award show together, because you used to come on my old podcast. We didn't do one last year, but the 2 years before that, we did our predictions.
That's why
and
I'm
awards,
doing this. So. I love it. It's so much fun.
Yeah,
and I just want to say 2018 is already looking better. 2017 was looking grim at the end, as far as the fights that were coming up, because we knew they'd so heavily packed some of the cards at the end of 2016. We're like, what's going to be left for 2017? And they did it again this year, but somehow, again, Ngannou, Ngannou Miocic and some other compelling matchups already on the docket. So, again,
super
optimistic.
Yeah, I think March is an interesting card. 222 could be a very, very interesting month.
And it was a better back half of 2017 than the front half, but, thank God for Georges St-Pierre.
Yeah, that really picked things up.
We are talking very differently about this year if that
doesn't happen.
If that doesn't happen.
But it messed up the middleweight division.
Fixed
All right. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your time. Everybody have a happy holiday, happy new year, and we'll see you in 2018.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.